30. The apartment building didn't look much like a plateau. Wayne stood with the others, hands on his hips, staring up at the thing. It was too shiny, with too many windows, like a big bottle of something expensive. Buildings shouldn't look like that. They should look like bricks, and have alleys that smelled of what came out of a fellow after he'd had a bottle of something too expensive. Most of all, he'd expected a plateau. No, wait, he realized. There's a canyon next. That's how the story goes. We gotta find that first. Comforted, he followed Maracy Wax and that Kim woman who tried too hard to be fiddly. The foyer had a doorman and everything. This place was fancy. Maybe Wayne should buy a building like that. A doorman sure would be helpful in carrying him up to his flat after he'd had too many bottles of something expensive. Or, well, more often he had bottles of something cheap as piss. Just because he was secretly rich and posh didn't mean he couldn't appreciate terrible booze anymore. He merely had to call it retro or authentic or something. The doorman sent for the building manager, who turned out to be a man shaped kind of like a brick, so that was a nice nod to proper building protocol. Maracy and Wax explained they needed to investigate the missing man's apartment while Wayne took a long walk around the foyer with its enormous paintings of people dancing. They wore suits and dresses, their legs stretched really long, their backs all straight as if they were made of rulers and not flesh. Was this the canyon from the story? Ma had said it was beautiful. But no, this didn't work. No self-respecting canyon would have pictures of dancing folks on the walls. And why did he assume this would be like the story? Well, because he'd thought of it, he supposed. Once you had a thought, you had to keep a hold of it. That was how things was. The building manager listened to Wax and Maracy's explanations, squinted at Kim's credentials, then grunted. He pointed the way to the elevator, and they all squeezed in. Wayne didn't much like elevators. It wasn't just being trapped in a little box or not knowing how it worked and needing to rely upon an operator. It wasn't that you could smell everyone a little too much when pressed together or couldn't see where you were going, which ruined the experience of going up high. Wait. No, it probably was that last one. Elevators were like a carnival ride designed by an overprotective parent who didn't want you getting scared or actually having any fun. He'd had more faith in them when they'd been moved by people, not electricity. Folks were overly trusting of this strange power, what leaked from sockets in the walls. After all, Wayne was a primary investor in the technology, and that should have been a big red flag for everyone. On the 22nd floor, at the end of a long hallway, the building manager used a set of keys to open a door into a large apartment. He gestured for them to enter with a grunt. "Anyone else been in here?" Wax asked. "No," the manager said. "He's been gone for 2 weeks," Wax said. "And nobody came looking? No constables, no family?" The manager shook his head, grunted, then left them, apparently wanting nothing to do with constables. "Wonder what his problem is," Maracy said, shutting the door behind them. "Dunno," Wayne said. "But whatever he has, at least it seems non-communicative." Wax walked to the center of the room. One wall had narrow floor-to-ceiling windows overlooking the city, with steel girders between them. The wall to its right was filled with bookshelves. There was a stylish sitting area to the left with a smart yellow rug and black furniture. Everything was exceptionally neat, though keeping your place clean was probably easy when you was either dead or vanished. "So," Maracy said, "they grabbed him or killed him, then left this apartment alone and visibly pristine. Trap?"
"Trap," Wax said with a nod. "Give me a minute to use Allomancy to scan about."
"Turns out it's really tough to make an explosive trap without some metal, even using modern clay explosives." They found 3 tripwires and 1 pressure plate, each hooked to a doozy of a grenade. The set evidently didn't care about a little collateral damage.
"So, whoever you're chasing," Kim said, wringing her hands nervously, "they got here before us. Rusts, I didn't know what I was in for.
They were undoubtedly behind Copper's disappearance, Wax said. Be careful, everyone. There might be a trap we missed. Kim, would you encourage anyone in the neighboring apartments to leave for the next hour?
She left to do so, and the rest of them set to some familiar work, going over a scene for clues. Kim returned a short time later while Wayne was inspecting the writing desk near the bookshelves. She knelt down beside him, looking up at the bottom as he knocked for secret compartments. She said, still acting uncertain.
I did as you asked, but why are we bothering to search? Your enemy has been over this place thoroughly.
Sure, Wayne said. I can even prove it. See these little drill holes? You make those to be extra sure there's no secret compartments, but only if you want to leave the furniture in one piece. Which is less fun, but sometimes there are good reasons. Like if you want the room to look normal to a bunch of constables when they visit, so they'll be more likely to get themselves exploded.
So what is there to learn?
Well, you see, this is a kind of fight, Wayne said. A back and forth. A dance. They set those traps in case someone dangerous got wind of the set. You don't need to blow up ordinary constables, just the extraordinary kind.
Like you?
Hell no,
Wayne said, then pointed to Maracy searching through books, then to Wax knocking against the far wall and listening for compartments.
You see those two? They represent the best of two worlds. Wax now, he's instinct. He's lived a lot, been shot at a lot. He didn't have the schooling to be a constable. He spent his school years learning from terrorist scholars about old things people wrote a long time ago. But Maracy, she's knowledge. She spent her life studying how to do this sort of nonsense. Sometimes I think she must have read more books on being a constable than have ever actually been written. She talks of crime patterns, preventing chains of poverty, and smart things what make you think maybe being a constable is about math. Put the two of them together, and you've got both. Instinct and knowledge, practice and application. The enemy? They look this place over, sure. They had first crack at it. But they left bombs. That whispers that they're worried they missed something. And so the dance, the fight. Can we find what they didn't?
Curious, she said. And what do you add to the team?
Comic relief. She cocked an eyebrow. Maybe a little whimsy, he said. Improvisation. Vision.
You have a broad imagination, then?
There are broads in my imagination almost all the time.
That provoked a smile. Seemed like a nice enough person when she wasn't pretending. Course, she was probably a traitor of some sort. Shame about that.
Hey, Wax, Wayne said. Look at this.
Wax joined him a moment later, inspecting the bottom envelope in a stack from the desk drawer.
What's that? Kim asked.
When you use a fountain pen, Wayne said, you gotta wait for it to dry. But sometimes you're in a hurry, or you're worried, so you put it away and put something on top of it. Like this stack of envelopes. Then the ink makes an imprint on the bottom.
Smudged, Wax said, holding up the envelope. But maybe legible. This part here, it's underlined. Does that look like a set of numbers to you?
A 7?
Wayne asked, pointing at 1. The next were too smudged to read.
Then a dash and a 13.
Maybe a combination, Kim said softly, crowding them to see the number. There are big stacks of lockers at the larger train stations that use numbers like this, where you can pay to store things.
Wax nodded slowly.
Maracy, what have you found?
I think these books have all been replaced, she said. He seems like the type who reads a lot, but these are all brand new. I'd guess the set took every book in the place just in case and refilled the bookshelves with red herrings.
This looks like the original furniture, though, Wax said, and demonstrated, moving a chair back so it bumped the wall right where the paint had been scraped away by repeatedly being hit like that. It's old, worn. The carpet, too. The room appears neat and orderly because the set cleaned it up after they did their search, but it was likely a mess before they arrived. "I think the fellow is dead," Wayne said, tapping the wall and breaking away some putty. "Bullet hole. Probably shot the poor dupe in the back while he was sitting here."
"Too specific a conclusion to draw from so little evidence," Marcy said, joining him. She pulled out a little brush and fiddled in the hole, eventually pulling out some flakes of something and putting them in a vial.
"Blood," Wayne guessed.
"Yes," she admitted. "And what might be a sliver of bone. They must have cleaned the blood off the desk, but removed only the bullet from the hole."
She ran her fingers over the wood.
"It's worn down. He used this desk a lot. Or bought an old one to begin with. Hard to say."
Wax walked over and handed Wayne a leather cap, like painters wore.
"Found it on the bedpost," Wax said. "What do you think? Have we given you enough to work with?"
"Maybe," Wayne said, slipping on the hat.
He walked to the center of the room, then stared out a window, putting it all together, trying to imagine the man who had lived here, trying to extrapolate from what they knew of him.
"He was respected at first," Wayne said. "A good scientist. But then he found things, heard other things, learned more. He was a chemist, right?"
"For a tire company," Marcy said.
"A front, most likely," Wax said. "He said his employers were making a bomb. I'd bet his chemistry work involved investigating weapon systems and explosives for the Bilming government."
"Yeah," Wayne said, his eyes closed. "He realized they were looking to make a bomb and heard about splitting harmonium, and he was maybe already a little eccentric. He tried to save the city, but he was an odd fellow, and nobody listened."
Eyes closed, he spread his arms out and turned around slowly, smelling the place and imagining it. Stacked old dishes in the corner. He could still smell them. Frantic nights, reading, thinking.
"They didn't listen," Wayne said. "And when they locked him up, he learned he couldn't use the normal justice system to stop the disaster."
"So what did he do?" Kim asked. "You think the people who killed him were scared that they missed something? That implies he knew something they didn't want leaked. Where did he stash it?"
"He didn't," Wayne whispered. "That's not what this fellow would do. You see, the set, they're going to be wrong about him. Just like Kim is."
"How?" Marcy asked softly from somewhere to his right.
"The set," Wayne said. "They hold on to knowledge. They strangle it, Marcy. But a fellow like this, he might be a little unhinged, but he wants people to know what he knows. He ain't going to lock his ideas up in some train station. He'll share them. If the government won't listen, then..."
He opened his eyes and met Wax's.
"He'll do whatever he can to get the information out."
"Kim," Wax said, thoughtful. "Which local broadsheet has the worst reputation? The type that publishes whatever nonsense it can get its hands on, particularly if it's frightening or a little off-kilter."
"There are at least 7 of those," she replied.
"Which one syndicates the writings of that fool Jack?"
"The Sentinel of Truth," she said. "I kind of love those."
She seemed embarrassed, but she needn't be. Those were good stories. Super dumb, of course, but sometimes you needed cheap storytelling with your cheap booze. Didn't make no sense to read literature while drinking out of a paper sack.
"Sentinel of Truth," Wax said. "Do you know the address of their offices?"
"I can look it up," Kim said, digging out one of her volumes of city addresses.
Wayne took off the hat and held it lightly.
The poor fellow Tobol Copper was dead. He hadn't let the set push him around or force him to work for them. They'd come here to learn what he knew about them and their plans, and they hadn't left him alive. But maybe he'd told someone, someone the set hadn't been able to find, because letting go of information to them would be inconceivable.
"I've got it," Kim said. "Publishing offices of the Sentinel can be found at..."
She looked up.
7th Street, Office 42-13. 13. Knights! The same numbers you found on the bottom of the envelope.
Wax squeezed him on the arm. Nice work, Wayne. He shrugged.
It's easy enough when you have a lot to work with.
That was a lot? Kim asked, curious.
Sure, Wayne said, tucking the hat away. A man's whole life.